This is episode 69 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. Today's Extraordinary Women Radio guest, Maria Popo, is an entrepreneur globally recognized for launching 5 successful startups inside Foxconn, 3Com, and 3M, plus 2 companies from the very ground up. Her approach as a woman raising capital is creative and inspirational, as she's taken an entrepreneurial route, which she tells us about in today's interview. And Maria will be joining us as one of our Circle of Inspiration facilitators at the September 18th Extraordinary Women Connect event here in Denver, Colorado. I'm super excited about this particular event as we're going to be focusing on women raising capital. With only 2% of venture capital funding going to women-owned businesses, I'm excited to bring our 4 Circle of Inspiration facilitators to the room to talk about their journeys raising capital. For the full lineup, jump out to my Extraordinary Women Connect page at camigelner.com under the Happenings tab and join us. It will be an amazing evening with amazing women. Extraordinary Women Connect is all about connecting great women to great women. And I love the connections that happen. And even more so, I love the lasting relationships that come out of Extraordinary Women Connect. I aim to give every attendee time with our powerful Circle of Inspiration facilitators in one-on-one conversation. And there are so many relationships that occur when great women come together in collaboration like this. I hope you'll join us and have the opportunity to meet women like our guest today, Maria Popo. Maria is known for developing and growing businesses from small regional companies to large multinationals with over 1 million employees. In 2016, Maria founded AMP10X to provide a cornerstone for education and innovation programs of impact. AMP10X's mission is to bridge inclusion and leadership gaps in the technology for those of all socioeconomic backgrounds. Prior to AMP10X, Maria was CEO and president of Ubi Interactive Americas, a manufacturer of wireless broadband solutions. Maria grew Ubi from a startup of $0 to over $1 billion in revenue. Her success was validated in 2012 when Ubi ranked number 8, as noted in the Wall Street Journal's top 50 fastest growing women-led companies. Maria was recently recognized by BoulderBits in May 2018 as one of 20 female founders to watch in Colorado. Let's meet Maria Popo. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Maria.
Thanks, Cami. I'm excited to be on this podcast with you today.
Oh, it's so much fun. And I look forward to meeting you face-to-face next month at the Extraordinary Women Connect event on September 18th.
I am looking forward to it, too. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of future or current entrepreneurs, so that'll be fun.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fabulous evening. I'm talking to so many women that have been raising funds. That's a topic that's been showing up for me in a lot of different ways. And I think it's such an important topic. It's a conversation that's a game changer for women in business.
Yeah, it's the biggest obstacle that women have, right? And you've talked to many entrepreneurs and you know that the funding is just so challenging. And even anywhere from angel, we know VC's tough, right?
But even
the angel funding, I'm mentoring a woman in the Commons and Downtown Denver Partnerships Women Who Rise program. Mm-hmm. And she really has a woman-oriented type of product, and it's hard to pitch it in front of men that just don't get it.
Right, right. So you probably get the blank stare, like, what does that mean, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. They don't relate, or they'll just ask a bunch of questions that probably aren't really applicable, but they will move forward and keep asking questions to try to figure it out.
And we're kind of half of the market, so... Probably a good idea to have a women's perspective at the table.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you are an entrepreneur globally recognized for launching 5 successful startups. I just want to say wow and congratulations. And what I love about your story is that you've been creative in your approach. You've done funding from a different perspective. Can you tell us a little bit about your startup story and stories over the course of your 5 successful startups?
Absolutely. So these startups, it's been an interesting career for me. I feel fortunate. The first startups were actually parts of large companies. And so I had that different approach. I started with a company that was doing telecom equipment, and they were acquired by 3M Corporation. And what's great about that is that there's the funding is in place. You don't have to pitch the funding, but you have to try to take a startup and determine how it's going to be successful in a large corporation. So I had that opportunity to do two of those at 3M, the first fiber equipment, and then launching 3M into the cable industry with a lot of their fiber test equipment and other hardware telecom equipment.
And so, a question for you on that is, so you saw an opportunity that they weren't actually taking advantage of, and you saw an opportunity to start a new business, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right. For 3M, they were focused on the telephone companies, the telcos at the time, and that was all of their business was mostly on the telco side. And they had some enterprise business, but one business they didn't have was the cable industry. And the equipment that they had, which was fiber, patch panels and connectors and splicing equipment and different types of objects that would go into the network, was applicable for the cable industry. So I approached the head of the division and suggested that we approach the cable industry, and that's what we did successfully.
And I think this is such an interesting approach, because so many women listening might be within an organization already and see that there's an opportunity for a market space that is not quite the focus of their company, but there's a huge opportunity. And so what a conversation to have, right? Where you can leverage some capital that's available to you, take that lead and move forward with it, but it becomes a separate company.
Exactly. It's you're funded, so you don't even really, it's not as stressful as funding to angels or a VC in a way. You're taking equipment that's already there, products and services that are already in existence. So entrepreneurship is a hot topic, and corporate innovation, and it's an option for women. It's also a great option for women to move into leadership in companies, because I was fairly junior at that point. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden people look at you in a different way.
Sure. Certainly. Right? So that first conversation that you had when, you walked into, was it your boss's office? Whose office did you walk into to have this conversation and pitch this idea to?
So the idea was pitched. It wasn't my boss at the time, the person that would become my boss, that had a sales background. And we had this discussion. I had this discussion with him, and he understood. He was an entrepreneur himself and understood the cable industry to a certain extent. And so we got together, which was great, because me as a more junior person in the organization, mm-hmm. he kind of validated me, honestly, as a more senior manager in the company that had been with the company, 10 to 15 years. So together we were able to make that pitch.
Nice. So what happened with all of that? What was the journey of all of that?
The journey was I was in Austin, where 3M Telecom was at the time, and they relocated me to Denver. That's how I ended up being in Denver. And we started off in the industry. We worked with partners and we were successful. They still have that business today within the cable industry.
Awesome. So did you actually eventually sell it all to them? Is that how that worked?
No, because it wasn't. So for entrepreneurs, in most companies today, Fortune 100 to 500 companies, there still isn't a vehicle for the company to actually be yours, where you have equity in that company. It's their company.
Okay. But you ran that company.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Awesome. I like that. That's really interesting. And then, so you've started 5 successful startups. What were the others?
So there was two that there was a startup that 3M acquired that I was part of, that I took some leadership in a little bit later, actually moving from New Jersey originally to Austin to make sure it was successful. Mm-hmm. And then this one that I mentioned. And then from there, it was going over to 3Com Corporation. So 3Com had acquired US Robotics, and they were a modem company. And 3Com wanted to determine how they could take the equipment that they have, modems and also back office equipment. And they were trying to determine how to enter the cable industry. So they, in that situation, they contacted me to launch, mm-hmm. to launch that business and make that entrance into cable.
Awesome. 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 So let's talk about taking risk. I mean, there's always risk when you're stepping up and you're starting a new company, you're, you know, putting a new idea out into the world. Would you say there is more risk when you bring capital into the game or less?
I think it depends on the people that are leading the company. Mm-hmm. Because what happens once you take more capital, you actually take less risk because you want to be, I mean, you are being held accountable by these right. investors, right?
Right, right?
And so you want to be seen as reliable. But we know that when it comes to entrepreneurship, that there's a certain amount of risk that you have to take. Mm-hmm. And once the money comes in, I think people just behave differently. Not that you're reckless without mm-hmm. with other people, you know, without the money, you're not, mm-hmm. or with the money, you're not reckless, but it's almost like public companies that behave differently than private companies.
Right, right, right. You have, I mean, there's that accountability there, but there's also a foundation there to lean into that allows for a bigger growth curve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So have you ever taken risks or what was the risk that you took that was the biggest success? Let's start with that one side of it.
So the biggest risk was a startup that when I left 3Com, I'll back up a second. 3Com exited the home networking business mm-hmm. and they were just about to bring a product to the cable industry, which when cable modems first came around. And it was when they first started manufacturing overseas. And I could have stayed with the company and led more on their more traditional carrier side. They mm-hmm. didn't, but I decided to approach that manufacturer in Taiwan, they manufactured in China, and say, hey, why don't we bring this product directly to the service providers? That was a significant risk because one, I'm the lead wage earner in the family, and I had small children, and we have, you know, bills to pay, and right. also I'd never worked with an Asian company before, mm-hmm. and there's a little bit of you're a little scared, right? You're
right.
Thinking, what
it's
am
a
I
long
going
ways
to do?
Away.
Yeah.
Like, how do you build those relationships and how do you keep the communications going, right?
Exactly. Like, can I trust these people, or am I going to leave a great mm-hmm. job mm-hmm. And then in a few months, 6 months, or find myself, you know, done, like this right. not working out. And so I thought, honestly, it was everything that I had always wanted to do, to actually take a startup and be in this position where I was building this from the ground up. So this was a non-corporate, like here in the US, I had to build up everything from HR to finance infrastructure through legal and taxes and all the employee hiring. And I said, you know, I'm crazy if I don't give this a shot. And I felt like I could do it. And so I did.
Right. So what did you learn through that?
I learned how to probably better listen through that experience and try to understand people from different backgrounds and cultures. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times when, especially in international organizations, there's assumption like, they think they can do it better than us. And I'm sure they were thinking the same thing about us when
right.
we want to take a certain
right.
approach. But you have to really have some humility and think about, let me look at this impartially, without bias, whatever the situation is, you know, whatever the strategy or the vision is, and let me think about what's really best for the company. So engagement with people of different backgrounds and mm-hmm. listening was,
you know,
was
the skill. I'm glad you brought that up. That is, it just makes me reflect back to my own corporate days when, you know, I had partners in different parts of the world, and, you know, the communications that, and the trust that would develop over time with, you know, the agents that I worked with or the different teammates that I had or employees that I had in different parts of the world. And that moment of really just slowing down and pausing and getting to connect with that person at a, you know, even, you know, at a, you know, just at a real person to person approach is so powerful. And it's so rewarding when you can build relationships like that. I mean, I have contacts today that are, you know, on every corner of the world because I took that time. And, you know, I've been gone from the corporate world for 10 years at this point, and I still have these deep relationships with people that I could, you know, reach out to at any given point. And it's really cool to be able to build those kinds of connections.
You get firsthand experiences that you would never have.
Mm-hmm,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt that way.
And just the, like you said, the cultural differences and being so respectful of that. I think one of my favorite agents was in China that I worked with for so many years. And we were actually born within a day of each other.
Wow.
You know, our birthdays were same year, same, you know, one day of one another. And it was just the differences in us growing up that we both had experienced when we'd sit down and we'd talk about that. It was fascinating to me.
Yeah, I would, if I had to do it over again, I definitely would do it over again. And not because everything was always wonderful, because in any company or startup, it's not going to be. But I had an opportunity to work for someone that was from China. At one point was the CEO. He was the CEO of 3Com that was acquired by Hewlett-Packard. And it was just a whole different level of engagement in how leaders of that background, how they lead. And mm-hmm. He was tough, but it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah. So what did you learn about connection and communication from that experience?
I learned how to, I would say, like, it's funny, that whole experience of working with Asia, that I really learned how to not use emotion so much. I almost went the other direction, like not enough emotion here, perhaps at some point in the US, but it was just like, you learn how to always be calm, and that sometimes things will happen where you think the world is, you know, oh my God, the sky is falling. And, but you just wait. You almost just wait, because things will change from day to day or week to week or month to month. You just have to maintain your confidence. And on the inside, like, don't keep being in your head. Just be outside of yourself
What a great lesson, even just, you know, for every day, whatever we're coming into, right? I mean, that is such a beautiful thing. It's like we all get into our head so often, and it's the more that we can kind of drop into the space of being and, you know, maneuvering through our days without the reaction, but much more through a gut instinct.
So true. There's lots of things that we can use that, I won't get into politics, but trying to hear what other people are saying and
yeah, understand. Absolutely. Absolutely. So have you ever taken a risk that didn't work out?
Probably so what happened with that company is a couple things real quick. That company that I started here we ended up folding it back into the larger corporation because of the cable operators wanted to have somebody with deep pockets and mm-hmm. billion-dollar companies. And what happened was that we were acquired by a company called Foxconn, who's the world's largest manufacturer. And then we spun off again. So I did a startup the second time, the same one, but as a different company. The one that was what ended up being tough is over a period of time, it was clear that company was not going to maybe do some of the things that I was interested in doing that I thought would bring the company to the next level. But the board was not interested in going that path. So I ended up leaving that company early last year. And what I ended up, the catalyst for that move was that I had relationships in the cable industry, and I started to work with the cable center to build a co-working. They were interested in exploring the possibility of doing a co-working center within the cable industry. And having had a lot of successes and relationships within the cable industry, I think I overestimated how successful I was personally going to be. I thought it was going to be easier, honestly. Mm-hmm. And that situation was really difficult because there's some things that I maybe hadn't accounted for as far as what was happening in the industry. And it ended up being successful from a perspective for the cable center because mm-hmm. I had gotten them a tenant that took over the whole thing. So not traditional workspace, but took over the whole thing and brought in all of this extra income. But what happened to me is I personally felt as I failed because what I had thought was going to happen didn't happen. I thought, okay, this is going to be a co-working center. We're going to do a business accelerator. We're going to, you know, build some, maybe cool lab in here, like a VR, AR lab. And none of that happened. It just didn't happen in that way.
Right.
The funding, first of all, the funding was a challenge, especially mm-hmm. for a woman at my, it's difficult for women anyway, but mm-hmm. when you hit 50, it becomes 10 times more difficult, right?
Interesting.
And also, I went through that period, that risk. I say it didn't work out, but I learned a lot of things. I really was engaged in the entrepreneurial community, mentoring at places like the Commons and TechStars and others, RVC Accelerator. And I met people that I would never meet, but that was hard because I started to, you know, when women and men too, but definitely women sometimes get imposter syndrome.
Oh, totally.
So when you launch this startup and it's not anything that you imagined it was going to become, that's difficult. And then you think about, you know, maybe I'm not as good as I think. Everybody, you go out there, you think you're original, and then you're like, we all have the same idea.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. And what I love about this story though, Maria, is that it did work out. It just didn't work out the way you thought it was going to. Right. And
it's true.
And what came from that was enhanced relationships and different outcomes than you anticipated. I've been reading a book recently, and it talks about the what if we were to release that failure, or what if we were really to accept that failure is an illusion. So it's you know, we are exactly where we're supposed to be at this time in our life, and that was supposed to happen in that sort of a way, and there's something different that's unfolding in front of you. And so it's just a fascinating question to play in, right?
Absolutely. Because failures often end up being, you know, as just like you said, end up being the charge or catalyst for something else. So mm-hmm. What's also great about the experience is I have a lot of empathy for other entrepreneurs because it's also psychologically tough. And, you know, entrepreneurs, especially if they're trying to raise funds, because they'll ask things like, what's the meaning of life? Why are we all here? Like, those are the things that was going through my mind. I'm like, what is the point of all of this?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, you know, it's, I think it's a question, yes, with entrepreneurs, but I also think it's a question that as we become the age that we are in our life as women, you know, right. We've had a lot of experiences under our belt and we start to get curious about what is the meaning? Why are we doing this? What is our purpose for doing the things that we do? And when we find that clarity around it, it is so powerful because that's what ignites this fire within us. And I think it's so you know, so beautiful what can unfold from that. But you are so correct in the fact that, you know, and I work with my clients on this all the time. It's like we get this inner critic going on in our voice that just circles and circles in our mind, you know, telling us something, right? It's like, it's in our background of our mind all the time.
Right.
And so it's really find, we are able to, with our inner critic, find all our own perceived personal flaws, right? And it can wreak havoc on us.
True.
What is the voice that your inner critic shows up in, and what does it, she, he say to you?
I think the inner critic in me historically has always come up around education, because starting off, I would describe myself as a non-traditional learner, not only in my approach to learning, but also having had a family and working full time, and then also trying to finish college at the same time.
Oh, I did the same thing.
And so that sticks in your mind. Like when you have that kind of a background, first, there were times when I thought, maybe I'm not that smart. Maybe I'm actually stupid. And I had went to 8 different universities. And some of it was due to relocations, but I was always interested in what I was interested in. And I some of the courses, I just didn't want to pursue it because I wanted to pursue things that was kind of focused in the direction that I was going. So, but that inner critic, it's like this little dirty secret.
Right. It's like this inner critic, you know, and it uses mean words that you would never ever say to somebody else, right?
Exactly.
You would never say, oh, you're stupid, to somebody else, but you get this voice that goes on. So what do you do to overcome it when that shows up? What do you, what do you know when that does show up for yourself?
Well, so what I was doing unconsciously at the time was, I think, trying to prove to myself that I was intelligent. I learned all kinds of things, a lot of it online. Like I taught myself to code probably just 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm not advanced and wouldn't be hired as a code, but I know the basics. And if I wanted to develop, I could do that. So I did that. I would go back and learn, okay, I failed algebra in high school, so I went back and learned calculus. Like I would do those kind of things like that are completely irrelevant to anything that I'm doing, but to kind of say, hey, I am smart enough. Like I can do this course on global poverty and statistics. And I think that I did that a lot at the beginning, but then, I had... Back at the company, the Taiwanese company, the CEO told me once that he said, it's not what you know that's made you successful. It's how you engage with people. He said, that's the reason we hired you.
Right.
He says, you have an ability. You're smart enough. Like you understand, right? The P&L and managing all of the business and operations aspect of the company. But what really makes you stand out and what differentiates you is, these other qualities. Right. And that helped me realize that, I need to focus more on that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I'm a big believer. That's one of the things I work with my clients always on is, who are you? What are your strengths? What are your passions? What are your values? And from that perspective, you can really uplift how you're showing up in your work, how you're showing up in your life, because it is this, you're uplifting the best parts of you, and that's when you really can shine.
Right. Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
Nice, nice. So can you tell us about a time when you were audacious?
The one that comes to mind first off is when I'm going back to since there are so many experiences within this Taiwanese and Chinese company, I'll go back to that. And it was when, it was funny, the CEO, this was another CEO, a newer CEO kept saying to me, he's like, I don't want to be CEO. Do you want to be CEO? So he said this a number of times. And finally, I decided, hey, I do want to be like the global CEO of this company. And I spoke to somebody on the board and got their support. And I flew out to Taiwan and I made my pitch. And that was definitely not something that they were accustomed to.
Right.
So, but it was an important part of me feeling like I had to at least try. And so I went out there, and it didn't work out as I had wanted it to. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, they really wanted someone that was Mandarin speaking, I was willing to relocate to Taiwan for that position, but it just didn't happen. However, I was glad that it was at that point that I knew where the company was heading and what was important to them. And I think the status quo was important to them. And I realized that I'm not a status quo type of person. So
you had some good lessons with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that also just elevates what you're, you know, when you're going, it's like, and it's so often, you know, women don't go for that big job that they want. I'm not qualified because of, I don't check the, you know, the two boxes out of the 10. Yep. Where often men will say, you know, I get 5 out of 10 and I'm going to apply for it. So I think that's it's a great lesson, and go for it.
Absolutely. And also think about working for promising startups, especially if you feel like they're well funded, because I remember that I had a hard time. I wanted to hire women in product positions, but they didn't apply. And I think they just felt we were a smaller company and it was risky and it was foreign based company. But the people that did come in had a lot of phenomenal experiences. They learned a lot. They moved into senior positions. They were paid, you know, they were paid well.
Nice. Nice. So what would you tell someone who is thinking about seeking capital investment to help fund a business idea? Where should they start?
Oh, there's so much to it. So I think first they have to think about, you know, do the basics. So have they explored the idea? Have they tested the idea? Everyone thinks that they have an original idea. So think about how others might be approaching the same type of product or service, and do some research first. Mm-hmm. And make sure you test. Because if you don't do that, investors hear from everybody that thinks that they've got the next unicorn, right? And it's important to have that foundational information. Now, once you have all that, say you've done your testing, you've got some traction, then if you're small, go start with angel investors. If you don't have enough to bootstrap it yourself, you just have to be prepared to know that you're going to give up some equity in your company. And there's a different ways. I think for those, it's definitely here in Denver and also in other markets. So programs like RVC Accelerator, where they do these mini boot camps, or even Thai Rockies has one now. Mm-hmm. Those are good because they take you through the process, and then you have this opportunity to pitch with their support to angel investors.
Right.
That's one way. But then you can also try to, you know, use connections, introductions to angels. There's organizations out there. It's not easy, but you just keep going. You have to just be ready that you may get some no's, or you may get a lot of no's, but that's just part of the process, and everybody has it, and you keep moving forward.
Nice. Very good. Those are good. I mean, those are good first steps for people to think about that are moving down that pathway. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing today and what's next for you and where people can learn more about your work.
So right now I've been doing some leadership coaching for engineers and technologists. So some Fortune 50s in the Bay Area, I'm doing some leadership coaching for. Mm-hmm. I have about 10 women out there that mm-hmm. I'm coaching. And nice. it's been very interesting because some of them are really junior out of college, and they need a lot of support because we're trying to keep women in these STEM fields, right?
Nice.
And I'm learning a lot. A lot of them, I think there's out of the 10, it's probably at least 6 different countries. And so I'm learning also more about their culture and how they feel that they are perceived at work and how they're engaging at work. So that's part of what I'm doing. And then I was offered a fellowship at Stanford University, and wow. That's the big thing. So
that's awesome.
It's another risk, because what do we tell everybody? Don't go to, you know, don't spend money on universities spend all this money and then maybe regret it later or have loans or use up money, especially at 50, right? But I thought, you know, I have some good people around me and I have some women that have said to me, this is everything that you have been looking for, because not only are you learning things in technology that are interesting to you, the network there are the type of people that that you wouldn't have access to right. out here. Right. So I'm excited about that. I am nervous because I think to myself, what if I go through this program and nothing is different? Right? Like, except that my bank account is far less. I thought about that, but again, I have a good group of people around me, and they said that you know, there's one woman in particular said, it's not possible, because when I look at the way that you engage with others, it's not possible that something good will not come out of this. It's just not. It'll put you on a different track.
And so you're trusting. I mean, that's what I'm totally hearing is it that you're trusting.
Yeah, I could just sit in my home office and engage here locally and, you know, do, I mean, there's lots of paths, right? Mm-hmm. But I thought, this is exciting to me and I'm willing to take the risk, and sometimes big risks, you know, have big payoffs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's part of following that risk opportunity that we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I get to do cool things. I'm helping. They agreed to let me help with research in the VR human interaction lab. So that's going to be fun. I'm going to be in Hack Lab with Facebook's former chief of security. So that's not going to happen here in Parker.
You're totally right. It's going to open up. It's new connections, it's new community and
right,
new ideas
right.
that you're bringing to the table or you're getting exposed to.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and where can people learn more about you? Can they follow you on LinkedIn?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter.
Okay.
But either one of those are probably the best.
Okay, and we'll put links to that on the show page. And final question for today is, what three pearls of wisdom can you share with our audience?
One would be, make it a habit to be uncomfortable. So we've heard before, be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it shouldn't just be something we say. It has to be something that we do, because every time that I've done that, it's and others that I'm surrounded by have done that, they felt good, whether it's speaking in front of a group of people, taking a new job, trying a new skill set, moving to a different area, the company doing, launching a startup. That's important. The second would be, I think I'm going to go to when times are tough, because that was recent. And what was important, when times are tough, you have to anchor yourself outside of your mind mm-hmm. somehow.
Mm-hmm. And, how do you do it?
For me, it was a couple ways. One was people. So once you start getting out of your head, humans are meant to be around humans, right? We're right. here to help each other. So be around others. When you are, especially again, as an entrepreneur at home or, you know, working with just one other person, you can totally be stuck in your head. So anchor yourself outside of it. And I also think about things like, this is just one small moment in time out of my whole life. And I only have so much time here. So what am I going to do about it? Am I going to sit here and feel sorry for myself or really think about what's next?
Right. Open up, really open up to the new possibilities. What else is possible?
Exactly. Exactly. And then I would say that I'll go back to, you know, audacity. Using audacity as a career tool
is extremely,
extremely, especially for women. Because women, I remember doing, like, I was at a woman's event that I was leading, and it was we were honoring women and men from the industry. And I said, let's talk about a woman's issue. This is a woman's event, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of, we did it in a fun way, but when you get to controversial topics like pay equity, you don't always get, you know, people get, some people were offended by us speaking about it, but if I hadn't had the audacity to do that, I wouldn't have met a lot of people that were extremely supportive, including men, and wanted to have more discussion about the topic and how do they felt like their companies are supporting the making sure that women are paid the same. But if you really look statistically, the gap actually gets bigger as you move up in companies because right. there's more negotiation and women are not always wanting to negotiate or feeling comfortable negotiating. So that's why audacity applies in a lot of areas.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Well, this has been so much fun, Maria, and I can't wait to meet you next month. I think our listeners are going to really enjoy, you know, listening to your good wisdom and expertise on this topic and, you know, learning from your journey.
Well, thank you very much, Cammie. This was fun.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye. I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you thinking about making the next bold move in your life? I invite you to take the Your Next Bold Move quiz at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can jumpstart a passionate and meaningful next chapter. You may also enjoy my book, Fire Dancer, Your Spiral Journey to a Life of Passion and Purpose, which is available on Amazon. In Fire Dancer, you will become intimately connected to your heart's calling and build the courage and resiliency to ignite your what's next. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter, and the links are available on my website. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.